Welcome back to the Green Front, and we are using all kinds of media to get word across to the American public and the rest of the world that we are in crisis, ecological, weather crisis, political crisis, economic crisis. Time for, a shift, for the shift to hit the fan. And one of the great movies that I am going to recommend that everybody see, it's just coming out now, is called Greedy Lying Bastards. It's kind of a documentary. It exposes the insidious domination of the fossil fuel industry, something that listeners to this show are certainly well aware of, most progressives are. But the rest of America doesn't quite get that connection. But if they're wondering why it is that we're not seeing more public action, political action, why up until maybe the last few days when we saw a critical mass of extreme weather events happening, why, you know, we're seeing this strange, surreal kind of limbo where we just can't quite act, even though we're seeing the green elephant is in the room all around us. We're going to find out more about what's at stake there and what's behind it with my next guest. I'm very pleased to welcome to the program filmmaker Craig Rosebraugh. Thanks for joining me.
Great. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, and you worked with, longtime eco-celebrity Daryl Hannah, longtime activist, and she and you teamed up together to make this very important, very timely film. Is it just coming out now, and will it be playing, hopefully, in theaters near us, or is it going to be another one of those great green-themed films that doesn't get widespread release, although I'm certainly hoping that's not the case?
Yeah, there are a lot of those, indeed. And we are just in final stages of post-production right now and are shopping around to distributors, and we are confident that it will get theatrical release in the U.S., and hopefully we'll have it out. Our goal is to have it out before the election, but I don't know, because time is running out, if that's going to happen, but that's the goal.
Well, speaking of timing, I don't know if you're going to be able to put in the end of the film what's happened just in the last couple of days and weeks in terms of, you know, fire, floods, droughts, oh my, what we're seeing continue to unfold in this record-setting summer, and how this might turn public attention to finally, you know, as I say, waking up and smelling the carbon. It's kind of hard to ignore what's going on.
It is certainly hard to ignore. You have the wildfires going on all through the West. Of course, some of the most dramatic scenes came out of Colorado with all the homes being burned. But in the last few years, you've had the tornadoes, the hurricanes, the excessive heat waves going on. And there's, a sizable number of scientists within the top government agencies in the U.S. that are attributing that to climate warming. And so the evidence is out there, and I think public opinion is changing back towards wanting our politicians to do something about climate change and reducing those greenhouse gas emissions that are, you know, really causing all these problems.
What did you and Dana really see happening, or not see happening, perhaps, that made you decide to make this film, and how long has it been in the works?
The film has been in the works for about 3.5, going on 4 years. And what started me on the project was being a lifelong environmental activist and being concerned about the route that we're headed as a nation. And then looking at the overwhelming amount of scientific evidence and the consensus on the international basis as to the belief in climate change, that it does exist and that it is, being very, very much impacted by humans' release of those greenhouse gas emissions. And seeing that, but then also, on the other hand, seeing relatively no political action, not only in the United States, but on the international arena to deal with it. So as we came closer to the road leading to Copenhagen in 2009, it became very clear that, you know, it was a concern amongst the international community. And, you know, I think a lot of people had hoped that there was going to be some sort of international binding agreement that came out of the Copenhagen summit, and there was very, very little. And so that kind of road going to Copenhagen and seeing the very, very much the juxtaposition of the scientific evidence and yet no political action, that really wanted to make me, you know, investigate why climate change is not being dealt with. And in order to do that, you really have to look at, you know, one of the main industries that is not only benefiting off of the inaction of our politicians with respect to climate change, but is also has waged a, you know, multi-billion-dollar PR campaign for years now to ensure that the public is left in the dark about the issue, and as a result, our politicians are doing nothing.
Let's play a little clip from your film. Here's a trailer from Greedy Lying Bastards.
Sorry, it's not going. going through.
Okay, well, that doesn't surprise me. But, Paul, if you could leave a message for me and get that to him, I'd appreciate it. Just okay. one word. You ready for the word?
Yeah.
It's help.
They have inordinate power. They're almost like nations to themselves.
This is a threat.
You need to be charged with that!
They are in the business of selling doubt.
He wrote a check, and one of the most prominent environmental activists in the world is dead.
The White House appointed an oil industry lobbyist as chief of staff at the Council on Environmental Quality.
I finally just had to resign in protest.
Today we're announcing the expansion of offshore oil and gas exploration.
Drill, baby, drill.
Global warming is a hoax.
So there's no need to take any action at this time.
VP said, let's put a plaster on a person's head.
I just want this never to happen to another father.
Well, that was a sample of this film. And, Craig, also a film called The Big Fix that Josh Tickell just came out with addresses the darker side of the BP story. You address that in your film as well. Why did you think that needed going back to, and what don't we know? What does the public not really know about the ongoing health and financial impacts on the Gulf Coast from that disaster?
You know, I thought I knew a lot about this issue of the oil industry. And of course, I think I'm not alone in thinking that there's a lot of corruption in there. But when you really dig into it and see the hardened proof of really how bad this industry is and what they get away with in their everyday business practices, it's incredible. And so I thought that once we got into really looking at the industry and the amount they're spending on lobbying, their influence, in the political arena overall, as well as the amount they're spending on just denial of the impacts of their business practices, denial of climate change, for instance, denial of the cuts they're making in safety, which led to disasters like the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe. You know, it's a very, very, basically to narrow it down, it's an industry that's out of control. And, we as Americans and people all around the world, we're paying the price for that. You had 11 men who died on the Deepwater Horizon. There's many more people throughout the Gulf region who are continually showing signs of chemical sickness. We spent a lot of time talking with people that had been exposed to the Corexit dispersant down there who were very, very ill. And that's the story that's not being told, is that, you know, this is going to have lasting implications that go on decades. If you look at the Exxon Valdez spill from 89, they're still feeling the impacts in the ecosystem up in Alaska. And this is, you know, how many times worse the amount of dispersant that was used to hide the oil in this particular instance is unprecedented. And, you know, that stuff just doesn't disappear. It's going to be around for many decades to come. And, you know, the Gulf, among other things, it's one of the nation's most plentiful fisheries. And we did an independent test on shrimp down there a year after the spill started, and had an independent lab test that shrimp for petroleum hydrocarbons. And our shrimp came back at registering 10 times the safe level of petroleum hydrocarbons as allowed under the FDA guidelines set after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And that shrimp is making it into the U.S. food supply nationwide. So there's a lot that the public isn't being told about the lasting implications of BP's reckless behavior in the Gulf, and the information does need to get out there.
And yet they're running those slick ads, of course, funded by BP, about how everything's returned to normal, best season ever. I mean, it's enough to make your blood boil, given what, you know, Dr. Ricky Ott, someone who has documented the long-term health impacts of the Exxon Valdez disaster, you know, has been reporting, and I'm sure what your film uncovers, that it's not quite that glorious, and you know, things have continued to be difficult, and you know, long-term health effects take, you know, a few years or more to really uncover fully and to make it sound as if, you know, the fish is fine and fresh and healthy and tourism is thriving and no impacts whatsoever 2 years later. It's pretty deceiving. I mean, it is deceiving, and it's quite maddening, isn't it?
It's very deceiving. It's a part of their PR campaign of denial, and that's really the focus of our film, is how far this industry goes to deny the consequences of their everyday business practices so they can maximize their profit. You know, and you know, to me and to us working on the film, we don't have a problem with people making money. I mean, that's part of what we do in America. But there is a need to do it the right way. And you don't screw people over. You don't harm the environment. You don't make future generations suffer just because you want to maximize your short-term gain. And that's what the oil industry has been doing for decades, and they continue to get more ruthless at it as time goes on.
And, of course, the fix was perhaps just as bad as the original assault in terms of what the chemicals they put in the water to disperse the oil.
Exactly. You know, when the spill first occurred, most of the oil is going to be sitting on top of the water. Well, the EPA comes along, and which they should, and says that, you know, we're going to fine you a lot of money per barrel spilled of oil. So BP, in answer to that, you know, ends up spraying in an unprecedented number of gallons of this Corexit dispersant to break up the oil. And what that does is it, you know, when the news helicopters fly over and when the investigators fly over to see how much of, you know, oil slicks still exist, they can't see it, because what that dispersant does is makes it divide up into small bits of oil, and that drops to the bottom of the ocean, bottom of the sea. And the problem with that is the next time a hurricane comes around, there's a huge chance that all that oil is going to wash on shore again. So the perpetual nature of continued contamination just from the oil alone is incredible in the Gulf. And then if you add in the very, very toxic consequences of that dispersant, it's going to be a problem that's going to stick around in the Gulf for decades. You know, one of the cases that we investigated and individuals we interviewed, there were two sets of families that went swimming off the coast of Florida, and they were told the water was safe, the beaches looked clean, and they went out and swam for 2 days. And just a short while later, 2 weeks later, one of the men who were swimming actually died of a severe seizure, had no history of seizures whatsoever, and he died. And the other family, the remaining family members, all suffer from severe impacts from chemical exposure.
And the co-producer, by the way, of The Big Fix, Rebecca Tickell, was in that water briefly, and she's had all kinds of skin rash problems as a result, and may even, you know, have a problem getting pregnant because of this. So, you know, she talked about that at the screening of that movie, again, The Big Fix, and you know, that's dramatic when you hear the producer of a movie saying she may not be able to have children, and she's been told it's because of her exposure to what was in that water.
It's inexcusable is what it is. You know, BP had the ability to use a less toxic dispersant if they were going to use a dispersant at all. The EPA recommended and asked BP to use a less toxic dispersant, and BP refused and used, you know, something that was very, very known to be a very, very dangerous, not only to humans, but to, you know, the entire ecosystem throughout the Gulf region and all the life forms that are in it, you know. And this is something that, again, like I said, is unprecedented. You know, there was a dispersant used in the Exxon Valdez spill, but it paled in comparison to what went on in the Gulf.
And as I mentioned at the top, Daryl Hannah, of course, the wonderful actress and known as much for her eco-activism as her, you know, great acting credits, is executive producer on this film. How did you team up with her in particular, since she has been a spokesman for, you know, several decades on this front, and she obviously is still very actively involved in trying to get the message out? She's been living a very off-the-grid, low-impact lifestyle for years, and many people know about that, but seeing her as an executive producer is really a great combination, I guess, of her talents, you know, as a film actress and now director and environmental activist.
Exactly. You know, personally, I've had a great deal of respect for Daryl for years, not only for her incredible acting ability, but also for her dedication to, you know, protecting the environment. And she's really put herself on the line time and time again to come out and do what's right and to make a stand for, you know, protecting those things that we need to survive on the planet. And she was a natural fit. The subject matter, I think, really impassions her. She's definitely gotten involved and is very, very much energized towards supporting the film and trying to get the message out there that, you know, we need a change. We need a paradigm shift in the way that we're thinking about living in this world. And we definitely need to take, you know, the oil industry down a few notches and rein it in and little things like taking away the $4 billion in tax subsidies, for instance. Perhaps overturning the Citizens United decision, and make them accountable. There should be regulatory agencies that are actually well-funded to implement whatever laws are passed to make sure this industry is held accountable for its actions. So situations like the Deepwater Horizon explosion never happen again. And if they do, the penalties are so stiff that the industry can't suffer those. And that's what needs to happen. And Daryl is very much on board with that and very supportive of, again, getting that message out there.
Well, someone else who's been in the forefront of certainly the climate change movement, even more so these days than Al Gore, is Bill McKibben, the activist, author, longtime author, writing on environmental issues and nature. The End of Nature, I think, was about 20 years ago, so he really is a visionary. He says, why in the world are we giving, you know, a performance bonus to those companies that are wrecking the planet, talking about the oil subsidies? That does seem like the first thing that needs to get addressed, and let's hope that this rash of extreme weather events affecting so many parts of America will finally make people realize we've got a problem with our emissions and we need to really, you know, have a paradigm shift just in terms of giving renewable energy sources a chance and stop subsidizing, you know, the industry that is going to take us down.
Exactly. And it was kind of ironic that it was just, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, was out in the East Coast giving a speech for an organization. And in his speech, he talked about, he does admit that climate change exists, but according to Mr. Tillerson, he believes it is manageable, it is not a risk, and that our technology and engineering will ensure that we survive and there's little to no impact to humans on the planet. And ironically, you know, at the same time he's giving that, there are, within a week, there are severe wildfires going on, you know, a heat wave on the East Coast, and scientists are linking that directly to climate change. You know, so it's just very appalling to me that these industry heads continue to tote a party line that's very much beneficial to their industry in denying either that climate change exists, or if they admit that it does, they say, well, it's no problem, we can get past it, you know, and continue on with our business as usual policies of throwing out these emissions at whatever cost.
And continuing on the surreal front, for those of us who have been connecting the dots, it does seem sometimes like Mother Nature has a sense of humor, if not a tragic sense of irony. James Inhofe supposedly is going to give a speech. Maybe he's doing it this hour. Complaining about all this climate alarmism. Funny and not so funny.
You know, James Inhofe, we feature prominently in the film. He is known as the primary climate change denier in Congress. And, you know, it's a matter of, to use your words, connecting the dots. Because if you take a wild guess at who James Inhofe's lifetime number one contributor is to his political campaigns.
Things go better with Coke, maybe?
Yes. The same brothers, at least half of them that had the giant fundraiser for Romney in the Hamptons this past weekend are the Koch brothers are the main lifetime funders of James Inhofe. So, you know, the cause and effect of that are very, very blatant. It doesn't take a genius to figure out where the money comes from, and that's why a certain message is being revealed in terms of Inhofe. So It's problematic. You know, to me, there's no real reason that money is having such an impact, why we allow money to have such an impact in our political process. And it is causing problems that are going to not just impact us, but, you know, I feel for future generations, the sons and daughters and grandchildren down the line that are going to have to put up with, you know, everything that we left them, basically.
Mm. Are you a parent yourself yet?
I am not yet, no.
Well, there's nothing like having a child in this world to make one, you know, once we know what we know, we environmental activist, educator, filmmaker types, media creator types, to not be able to stop, you know, because look what's on the line. And, you know, a stable climate is critical for, you know, all things to thrive, not just humans, but all life forms. And it seems that everything is at stake, and it seems with this very critical election coming up, I really hope you can get your film out there beforehand and widely, and we'll certainly do our part to let people know about it. But as you acknowledged at the top, too often these great, you know, themed, environmental-themed films and projects, you know, get seen by the choir and then kind of go away. And I hope that doesn't happen with this, because yours and a couple of others are really so timely, so important for people to understand this. And, you know, if people do want to be informed and not in the dark and not in the dark ages, I say, you know, go, you know, watch it. You know, people who would say, oh, I don't believe in climate change, I'd always say, did you watch An Inconvenient Truth? Did you spend 90 minutes looking at that? No, I don't believe Al Gore. You know, don't kill the messenger, people. Look at the message. Look at the science. Look at the facts. And I just don't have any tolerance for people, especially parents, who, you know, I meet in my daily travels, even here in, I say, the progressive Bay Area, who just can't be bothered, too busy. It's a responsibility. Yeah. It's an obligation, I think, to be informed, given all that's going on, all that's at stake, and the incredibly well-funded, you know, PR machine that has been dominating the conversation for too long.
I agree. I do think it is an obligation, and it's something that, you know, it's our responsibility as people that are, you know, on this earth, cohabitating with not only each other but the rest of the living beings on this earth, you know, to preserve it and make sure there is a future for all the generations down the line. And in the direction we're heading, that's certainly not the case. So we definitely need a shift in the way that we're living, in the way that we're acting and considering one another. And, you know, I hope films like ours can help make a difference in that.
And we didn't even get into Citizens United, which we know is a big problem there. But I want to thank you again, and good luck with finishing this film as rapidly as you can. It's called Greedy Lying Bastards. I think that pretty much says it all. Exposes the insidious domination of the fossil fuel industry. Craig Rosenbaum, again, thanks for joining us on The Green Front. That's it for this edition. And if you'd like to go back and hear the entire show, go to the archives at prn.fm or my website, which is thegreenfront.com. Tell your friends about the best-kept secret on the Internet. I've been doing green radio for 15 years and gone too far to stop now. So have a great green week. See you next time. Another great show planned for you next Wednesday as well.